Hi, this is Mrs. English. I'm reading to you today from Homer's Odyssey. This is the Richmond Lattimore translation. And we are now reading book 24, the last book. Book 24. Hermes of Cyllene summoned the souls of the suitors to come forth, and in his hands he was holding the beautiful golden staff, with which he mazes the eyes of those mortals whose eyes he would maze, or wakes again the sleepers. Herding them on with this, he led them along, and they followed, gibbering. Who are these? These are the suitors. And who takes mortals when they die down to Hades? This is Hermes, of course, the messenger who escorts them down. So they follow him, gibbering. And what's it like? And, as when bats in the depth of an awful cave flitter and gibber, when one of them has fallen out of his place in the chain that the bats have formed by holding on one another, so gibbering they went their way together, and Hermes the kindly healer led them along down moldering pathways. They went along and passed the ocean stream, and the white rock, and passed the gates of Helios the sun, in the country of dreams, and presently arrived in the meadow of Asphodel. This is the dwelling place of souls, images of dead men. There they found the soul of Achilles, the son of Peleus, the soul of Patroclus, and the soul of stately Antilochus, and the soul of Aias, who for beauty and stature was greatest of all the Danaans, next to the blameless son of Peleus. So these were gathered around Achilles, and now came to them the soul of Agamemnon, line 20, the son of Atreus, sorrowing, and around him were gathered the souls of those others, who with him also died and met their fate in the house of Aegisthus. First of these two to speak was the soul of the son of Peleus. A son of Atreus, we thought that all your days you were favored beyond all other heroes by Zeus, who delights in the thunder, because you were lord over numerous people and strong ones in the land of the Trojans, where we Achaeans suffered hardships. And yet it was to you that the destructive doom spirit would come too early. But no man who is born escapes her. How I wish that, enjoying that high place of your power, you could have met death and destiny in the land of the Trojans. So all the Achaeans would have made a mound to cover you, and you would have had great glory for your son hereafter. You would have won great glory for your son hereafter. In truth, you were ordained to die by a most pitiful death. Death most pitiful. Line 35. The soul of Agamemnon, son of Atreus, answered, O happy son of Peleus, Achilles, like the immortals who died in Troy, far away from Argos, and around you others were killed, Trojans and the best men among the Achaeans as they fought over you, and you in the turning dust lay mightily in your might, your horsemanship all forgotten. We fought on for the whole day long, nor would we ever have stopped fighting if Zeus had not stopped us with a whirlstorm. But when we had carried you, and by this they mean the body, when we had carried you to the ships, away from the fighting, we laid you out on a litter, and anointed your handsome body with warm water and with unguents, and by you the Danaans shed many hot tears, and cut their hair short for you. The reader will remember that the listener, in the Iliad, the Achaeans cut their hair for Patroclus until you couldn't even see the body anymore, so I don't suppose there was too much hair to cut. They cut their hair short for you, and also, line 47, your mother, hearing the news, came out of the sea, with immortal sea girls beside her. Immortal crying arose and spread over the great sea, and trembling seized hold of all the Achaeans. And now they would have started away and gone on the hollow ships, had not a man of much ancient wisdom halted them. Nestor, whose advice had also shone best before this, he in kind intention toward all spoke forth and addressed them, Hold fast, Argives, do not run away, O young Achaeans. Line 55. It is his mother coming out of the sea with immortal sea girls beside her to be with her son who has perished. So he spoke, and the great-hearted Achaeans stayed from their panic. Around you, and this is the body of Achilles, around you stood the daughters of the sea's ancient, mourning pitilessly, with immortal clothing upon them. and all the 9 muses in sweet antiphonal singing mourned you, nor would you then have seen any one of the Argives not in tears, so much did the singing muse stir them. For 10 and 7 days alike, in the day and the night time, we wailed for you, both mortal people and the immortals. Line 65. On the 18th day, we gave you to the fire, and around you slaughtered a great number of fat sheep and horn-curved cattle. You were burned in the clothing of the gods, and abundant ointment and sweet honey, while many Achaean heroes moved in armor about the pyre where you were burning, with horses and on foot, and a great clamoring rose up. But after the flame of Hephaestus had consumed you utterly, then at dawn we gathered your white bones, Achilles, together with unmixed wine and unguents. Your mother gave you a golden jar with handles. She said that it was a present from Dionysus, and was the work of renowned Hephaestus. In this your white bones are laid away, O shining Achilles, mixed with the bones of the dead Patroclus, son of Menoetius, and apart from those of Antilochus, whom you prized above all the rest of your companions after the death of Patroclus. Around them, then, we, the chosen host of the Argive spearmen, piled up a grave mound that was both great and perfect, on a jutting promontory there by the wide Hellespont, so that it can be seen afar from out on the water by men now alive and those to be born in the future. Then your mother, line 85, asking the gods for the gift of beautiful prizes, set them in the field for the best of the Achaeans. I, in my time, have attended the funerals of many heroes, at those times when, because a king has perished, the young men gird themselves for sport and set up the prizes. But these your heart would have admired beyond any others, such beautiful prizes as were set up by the goddess, silver-footed Thetis, for your sake. You were very dear to the gods. So even now you have died. You have not lost your name, but always in the sight of all mankind. Your fame shall be great, Achilles. But what pleasure was there for me when I had wound up in the fighting? In my homecoming, Zeus devised my dismal destruction, to be killed by the hands of my cursed wife and Aegisthus. Now, as the spirits were conversing thus with each other, there came approaching them the courier Argifontes, Hermes, line 100, leading down the souls of the suitors killed by Odysseus. These two, in wonderment, went up to them as they saw them, and the soul of Agamemnon, son of Atreus, recognized glorious Amphidon, the dear son of Melanias, who in his home in Ithaca had once been his guest friend, Hisenus. The first of the two to speak was the soul of Agamemnon. Amphidon, what befell you that you came under the dark earth, all of you choice young men, of the same age? Nor could one, gathering the best men out of all a city, have chosen otherwise. Was it with the ships? And did Poseidon, rousing a storm blast of battering winds and waves, towering, prove your undoing? Or was it on the dry land? Did men in battle destroy you as you tried to cut out cattle and fleecy sheep from their holdings, or fighting against them for the sake of their city and women? Tell me what I ask. I claim that I am your guest friend. Or do you not remember when I came into your house there, together with godlike Menelaus, to rouse up Odysseus, so he would go to Ilion on the wide-benched vessels with us? And we were a whole month crossing over the wide sea, having hardly persuaded Odysseus, sacker of cities. Line 120. Then in turn the soul of Amphimedon answered him, saying, Son of Atreus, most lordly and king of man, Agamemnon, I remember it all, illustrious, as you tell it. I will tell you well and truthfully the entire story of how our wretched end came in death, how it was accomplished. We were courting the wife of Odysseus, who had been long gone. She would not refuse the hateful marriage, nor would she bring it about, but she was planning our death and black destruction with this other stratagem of her heart's devising. She set up a great loom in her palace and set to weaving a web of threads, long and fine. Then she said to us, Young men, my suitors, now that the great Odysseus has perished, wait, though you are eager to marry me, until I finish this web, so that my weaving will not be useless and wasted. This is a shroud for the hero Laertes, Penelope's father-in-law. For when the destructive doom of death, which lays men low, shall take him, lest any Achaean woman in this neighborhood hold it against me that a man of many conquests lies with no sheep to wind him. So she spoke, and the proud heart in us was persuaded. Thereafter, in the daytime, she would weave at her great loom, but in the night she would have torches set by and undo it. So for 3 years she was secret in her design, conniving the Achaeans, but when the 4th year came, with the seasons returning and the months waned, and many days had been brought to completion, one of her women, who knew the whole of the story, told us, and we found her in the act of undoing her glorious weaving. So, against her will and by force, she had to finish it. Then she displayed the great piece of weaving that she had woven. She had washed it, and it shone like the sun or the moon. At that time, an evil spirit, coming from somewhere, brought back Odysseus, line 150, to the remote part of his estate where his swineherd was living. At that time, the dear son of godlike Odysseus came over from sandy Pylos, voyaging in his black ship. These two, after compacting their plot of a foul death for the suitors, made their way to the glorious town. In fact, Odysseus came afterward. Telemachus led the way, and the swineherd brought in Odysseus, wearing sorry clothing upon him in the likeness of a wretched vagabond, an old man leaning on a stick, and poor was the clothing he had upon him. Not one of us, even of the older ones, was able to recognize who he was when he appeared so suddenly. But we treated him rudely, with evil words and with blows. Odysseus nevertheless endured for the time, with steadfast spirit, to be pelted with missiles and harshly spoken to in his own palace. But then, when the purpose of Aegis-bearing Zeus had stirred him, line 165, he with Telemachus took away the glorious armor and stowed it away in the chamber, closing the doors upon it. Then, in the craftiness of his mind, he urged his lady to set the bow and the gray iron in front of the suitors. The contest for us ill-fated men, the start of our slaughter. Not one of us was able to hook the string on the powerful bow, but all of us were found far too weak for it. But when the great bow was given into the hands of Odysseus, then all of us spoke out and threatened the man, telling him not to give the bow, however much he might argue. Line 175. Only Telemachus urged him on and told him to give it. Then, much enduring, Odysseus, in his hand accepting it, easily strung the bow and sent a shaft through the iron. He stood on the threshold and scattered out the swift shafts before him, glaring terribly, and struck down the king Antinous. Then he shot his baneful arrows into the others, aiming straight at them, and they dropped, one after another. It could be seen then that some one of the gods was helping him, for these men, chasing us through the house in their strength and fury, killed us, one man after another. The floor was smoking with blood. Line 185. And the horrible cries rose up as our heads were broken. So, Agamemnon, we were destroyed, and still at this moment our bodies are lying uncared for in the halls of Odysseus, for our people in the house of each man know nothing of this. They who would have washed away from our wounds the black blood and laid us out and mourned us, for this is the right of the perished. The soul of Agamemnon, line 191, son of Atreus, answered him, "Oh, fortunate son of Laertes, Odysseus of many devices, surely you won yourself a wife endowed with great virtue." And this is Megale Arete, with mega excellence. Great virtue, how good was proved the heart that is in blameless Penelope, Icarius's daughter, and how well she remembered Odysseus, her wedded husband, thereby the fame of her virtue. The kleos of her arete, of her excellence, the fame of her virtue shall never die away, but the immortals will make for the people of earth a thing of grace in the song for prudent Penelope. So, the dead suitors are looking for a little sympathy from Agamemnon, and they get none. In fact, Agamemnon's reaction is one of, "Oh my goodness, good job, good going, Odysseus, did you ever get the wife?" Line 199. Not so did the daughter of Tyndareus fashion her evil deeds. And of course here Agamemnon is referring to his own wife, Clytemnestra. Not so did the daughter of Tyndareus fashion her evil deeds when she killed her wedded lord, and a song of loathing will be hers among men to make evil the reputation of womankind, even for one whose acts are virtuous. So they're discussing Agamemnon's own death by the hand of his wife. So these two were conversing each with the other, standing in the gates of Hades, underneath the Earth's secret places. And now we have a scene change again. Beginning with line 205, we are back above the Earth. The others went from the city, and presently came to the country place of Laertes, handsomely cultivated. Laertes himself had reclaimed it after he spent much labor upon it. There was his house, and all around the house ran a shelter, in which the slaves, who worked at his pleasure under compulsion, would take their meals and sit and pass the night. There was also an old Sicilian woman there, who duly looked after the old man out on the estate, far away from the city. There Odysseus spoke a word to his son and his servants. "Go now, all of you, inside the strong-fashioned building, and sacrifice the best of all the pigs for our dinner presently, but I myself will make trial, I will test, will make trial of my father, to see whether he will know me and his eyes recognize me, or fail to know me, with all this time that has grown upon me." So he spoke, and gave his thralls their weapons of warfare. Line 220. And they went quickly on their way to the house, but Odysseus went closer to the abundant orchard, searching. He did not find either Dolios, as he came into the great orchard, nor any of his thralls, nor his sons, for all these had gone off to gather stones and make them into a wall retaining the orchard, and the old man had guided them on their errand. But he did find his father alone in the well-worked orchard, spading out a plant, and he had a squalid tunic upon him, patched together and ugly, and on his legs he had oxhide gaiters fashioned, and patched together to prevent scratching, and gloves, line 230, gloves on his hands because of the bushes, and he was wearing a cap of goatskin on his head to increase his misery. Now, when much enduring, great Odysseus observed him, with great misery in his heart, and oppressed by old age, he stood underneath a towering pear tree and shed tears for him, and deliberated then in his heart and his spirit whether to embrace his father and kiss him and tell him everything, how he was come again to his own dear country, or question him first about everything and make trial of him. In the division of his heart, this way seemed the best to him. First to make trial of him, line 240, and speak in words of mockery. With this in mind, noble Odysseus came straight up to him. He was digging around a plant, with his head held downward, and now his glorious son stood near and spoke to him, saying, "Oh, sir, there is in you no lack of expertness in tending your orchard. Everything is well cared for, and there is never a plant, neither fig tree, nor yet grapevine, nor olive, nor pear tree, nor leek bed, uncared for in your garden. But I will also tell you this, do not take it as cause for anger. You yourself are ill cared for." Okay, so he says, "Your garden is beautiful, old man. Now don't be offended. Don't take it as cause for anger. You yourself are ill cared for, together with dismal old age, which is yours," line 250. "You are squalid and wear foul clothing upon you. It is not for your laziness that your lord does not take care of you, nor is your stature and beauty, as I see it, such as ought to belong to a slave. You look like a man who is royal, and such a one as who, after he is bathed and eaten, should sleep on a soft bed, for such is the right of the elders. But come now, tell me this, and give me an accurate answer. What man's thrall are you? Whose orchard are you laboring? And tell me this, and tell me truly, so that I may know whether this is really Ithaca I have come to, as that man told me just now as I encountered him on my way here. Not a very sensible man, for he had no patience to tell me all, or listen to what I said when I asked him about my friend from abroad, whether he still lives and is somewhere here, or is dead now and down in the house of Hades. Line 265. And I tell you this, listen to me and understand me. Once I entertained a friend in my own dear country, when he came to our house, nor has any man been dearer to me among all those who have come from afar to my palace. He announced that he was by birth a man of Ithaca, and said that his father was Laertes, son of Archesius. I took him into my own house and well entertained him with proper hospitality, since there was abundance in the house, and gave him presents of friendship, as was becoming. I gave him 7 talents of well-wrought gold, and I gave him a mixing bowl, line 275, made all of silver with flowers wrought on it, and 12 mantles to be worn single, as many blankets, as many handsome cloaks, also the same number of tunics, and aside from these, 4 comely women, whose skill in handiwork was without fault, and he could choose the ones that he wanted. line 280. Then his father, shedding tears, said to him in answer, "Friend, this land that you have reached is the one you are seeking, but violent and reckless men are in control of it, and the grace of those countless gifts you gave is all gone for nothing. If you had found him yet alive in the land of Ithaca," because Laertes, Odysseus's father, has figured out that this man, who he thinks is a stranger, he is coming to look for his son Odysseus. "If you had found him yet alive in the land of Ithaca," line 285, "he would have sent you along with gifts in return and given good entertainment, as is right for him who has given. But come now, tell me this and give me an accurate answer. How many years is it since you entertained that unhappy guest of yours? My son, did he ever live? An ill-starred man, one whom, far from his country and his own people, the fish have eaten in the great sea, or else on the dry land he's been spoil for wild beasts and for birds, and his mother and father, whose child he was, did not give him his rights nor mourn him, nor yet did his bountiful wife, circumspect Penelope, wail for her husband on his bier as would have been fitting, nor close his eyes, for that is the right of those who have perished. But tell me this too, tell me truly, so that I may know it. What man are you, and whence? Where is your city, your parents? Where is your ship, swift ship, standing now, that brought you to this place, and your godlike companions?" Line 300. "Or did you come as a passenger in someone else's ship, and they let you off and went on?" Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, "See, I will accurately answer all that you ask me. I am from Alebus, where I live in a famous dwelling, and am the son of Amphidus, son of the Lord Polypemon. My own name is Epirotus, and now the divinity drove me here on my way against my will, from Sicania, and my ship stands nearby, off the country, away from the city. But as for Odysseus, this is by now the fifth year since he went from there, and took his departure out of my country. Unhappy man! Indeed, the bird signs were good at his going. They were on his right, and I too rejoiced as I sent him off, and he rejoiced as he went. My heart was still hopeful that we would meet in friendship and give glorious presents." He spoke, line 315, and the black cloud of sorrow closed on Laertes. In both hands he caught up the grimy dust and poured it over his face and grizzled head, groaning incessantly. The spirit rose up in Odysseus, and now in his nostrils there was a shock of bitter force as he looked on his father. Line 320. He sprang to him and embraced and kissed, and then said to him, "Father, I am he, the man whom you ask about. I am here, come back in the 20th year to the land of my father. But stay now from your weeping, shedding of tears and outcry, for I tell you this straight out, the need for haste is upon us." Line 325. "I have killed the suitors who were in our palace, avenging all their heart-hurting outrage and their evil devisings." Then in turn Laertes answered him and said to him, "If in truth you are Odysseus, my son, who have come back here, give me some unmistakable sign so that I can believe you." Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, "First then, look with your eyes upon this scar and know it. The wild boar inflicted it with his white tusk on Parnassus when I went there, for you and my queenly mother had sent me to Autolycus, my mother's dear father, so I could be given those gifts which he promised me and consented to me when he came to us. Or come then, let me tell you of the trees in the well-worked orchard which you gave me once. I asked you of each one when I was a child following you through the garden. We went among the trees, and you named them all, and told me what each one was." Line 340. "And you gave me 13 pear trees, and 10 apple trees, and 40 fig trees, and so also you named the 50 vines you would give. Each of them bore regularly, for there were grapes at every stage upon them, whenever the seasons of Zeus came down from the sky upon them, to make them heavy." Line 345. He spoke, and Laertes' knees and the heart within him went slack, as he recognized the clear proofs that Odysseus had given. He threw his arms around his dear son, and much enduring, great Odysseus held him close, for his spirit was fainting. But when he had got his breath back again, and the spirit gathered into his heart, once more he said to him, answering, "Father Zeus, There are gods indeed upon tall Olympus, if truly the suitors have had to pay for their reckless violence. But now I am terribly afraid in my heart that speedily the men of Ithaca may come against us here and send out messages everywhere to the Cephallenian cities. Then resourceful Odysseus spoke in turn and answered him, "Never fear, let these concerns not trouble your thinking, but let us go to the house which lies here next to the orchard, for there I sent Telemachus on ahead with the ox herd and the swine herd, so that they could most quickly prepare our dinner." So he spoke, and the two went into the handsome dwelling. And when they had come into the well-established dwelling place, there they found Telemachus and the ox herd and swine herd, cutting up a great deal of meat and mixing the bright wine. Line 365. Meanwhile, the Sicilian serving maid bathed great-hearted Laertes in his house, and anointed him with olive oil, then threw a handsome mantle about him. Also, Athena, standing by the shepherd of the people, filled his limbs out and made him taller and thicker to behold than he had been. He stepped forth from the bath, and his son looked on in amazement as he saw him looking like one of the immortal gods to encounter. And so here again we have the magical bathtub experience, where Athena beautifies Laertes in the bathtub. So he spoke to him and addressed him in winged words, saying, "Father, surely some one of the gods who are everlasting has made you better to look upon for beauty and stature." Line 375. Then in turn the thoughtful Laertes said to him in answer, "O Father Zeus, Athena, and Apollo, if only as I was when, lord of the Cephallenians, I took Nericus, the strong-founded citadel on the mainland cape, if only I could have been such yesterday in the palace, with armor upon my shoulders to stand beside you and fight off the suitors' attack." And so here is Laertes saying, "Oh, I wish I was there yesterday. I wish I could have been like this and been with you at the slaughter to help you, to stand beside you and fight off the suitors' attack. So I would have unstrung the knees of many there in the hall, and your heart within you would have been gladdened." Now these two were thus conversing one with the other. And all, when they had finished their work and made ready for their dinner, took their places in order on chairs and along the benches. Then they were putting their hands to the dinner, and now there drew near the aged Dolios, and the old man's sons were with him, coming from their toilsome work, for their mother had called them. This was the old Sicilian woman who had raised them and carefully looked after the old man, now that great age had seized him. These, when they saw Odysseus and recognized his identity, stood still in the hall in astonishment. But Odysseus had words of conciliation for them, and so he addressed them, "Sit to dinner with us, old man, and let be your wonder. For a long time now, line 395, we've been eager to put our hands to food, but we waited for you in the halls, ever expecting you." So he spoke, and Dolius, opening his arms wide, ran straight to him and took Odysseus's hand at the wrist and kissed it, and spoke aloud to him and addressed him in winged words, saying, "Dear master, since you've come back to us, who wanted you but expected you no more, but the very gods have brought you back. We heartily welcome you. May the gods give you blessings. And tell me this, and tell me truly, so that I may know it. Does a circumspect Penelope know all the truth of this, and that you have come back, or shall we send her a messenger?" Then in turn, resourceful Odysseus said to him in answer, "As she already knows, old man, why should you trouble to do this?" He spoke, and Dolius sat down again on the polished chair. So, too, around great Odysseus the sons of Dolius came to speak to him in welcome, line 410, and shake hands with him, and then went back in order to sit by their father Dolius. So these were busy in the hall preparing their dinner. But rumor, now we have a change of scenery, rumor, a messenger, went swiftly through all the city, crying aloud the terrible death and doom of the suitors. And the people, as they heard it, line 415, came from their several places to gather with groaning and outcry before the house of Odysseus. They carried the corpses out of the house, and each one buried his own, and sent back all who had come from the other cities, giving them in charge of fishermen to take in their fast ships. So the relatives are taking back the dead suitors, those that belong to them, and those that have come over the sea, since Ithaca is an island, they give to fishing men and tell them to take the body back home. Line 420. They themselves, sorrowful at heart, gathered in assembly. But when they were all assembled and in one place together, Epithes stood up and addressed them, since unforgettable sorrow was stored away in his heart for the sake of Antinous, his son, who was the first to be killed by noble Odysseus. For his sake, weeping tears, he now stood forth and addressed them. Friends, this man's will worked great evil upon the Achaeans. First, he took many excellent men away in the vessels, when he went off to the Trojan War with him, and lost the hollow ships, and lost all the people, and then, returning, killed the best men of the Cephallenians. So first Odysseus went off in a ship, which really claimed an entire generation of men, probably. We just have grandpas and young men left. We have lost Odysseus' entire generation. He came home alone. Line 430. Come then, before he can make his way quickly over to Pylos, or else to shining Elis, where the Epeans are lords. Let us go, or else we shall then be shamed forever. All this shall be a disgrace, even for the men hereafter to hear of, if we do not take revenge on the murderers of our brothers and sons. Line 435. For there would be no pleasure in my heart to go on living, but I would wish to die and be with the perished. So let us go before they cross the sea and escape us. He spoke weeping, and pity took hold of all the Achaeans. But now Medon arrived, and of course, who is Medon? Medon the herald and Phemius the singer were spared. But now Medon arrived, and with him the inspired singer. From the palace of Odysseus, since now the sleep had left them, they stood in their midst, and amazement seized upon each man of them. Then Medon, full of prudent thoughts, spoke forth and addressed them. Hear me now, you men of Ithaca, for Odysseus devised what he did, not without the consent of immortal gods. Line 445. I myself saw an immortal god who was standing beside Odysseus. In every way it resembled Mentor. An immortal god was seen at one time in front of Odysseus, urging him on, and then next time he would rout the suitors and dash about the hall while they fell one after another. So he spoke. Line 450. And a green fear took hold of all of them. Now Halitherses, master's son and aged warrior, spoke to them. He alone saw what was before and behind him. Now in kind intention toward all, he spoke forth and addressed them. Hear me now, you men of Ithaca, hear what I tell you. Line 444-55. It is by your own weakness, dear friends, that these things have happened. You would not listen to me, nor to Mentor, shepherd of the people, when we told you to make your sons give over their senseless mood, for they, in their evil recklessness, did a great wrong in showing no respect to the wife, despoiling the possessions of a lordly man. They thought that he never would be coming home. Now let it be thus. Hear me and do as I tell you. Let us not go there. He who does might incur some evil. So he spoke, but more than half who were there sprang up with a great cry, though others stayed where they were assembled, since Halitherses' speech did not please their hearts, but they listened to Epithes, and now suddenly they ran for their armor. And now they, when in the shining bronze they had shrouded their bodies, assembled all in a body in front of the spacious city. Epithes was their leader in their foolishness. He thought he would avenge, line 470, the slaughter of his son, but he was not ever to come back, but must himself encounter his death there. There we have a more than foreshadowing what is to come of the father of the fool. And now we have a scene change. Between line 471 and line 472, we have a scene change. We are jumping up to Olympus with the gods and goddesses. Now Athena spoke a word to Zeus, son of Cronos. Son of Cronos, our father, O lordliest of the mighty, tell me what I ask. What does your mind have hidden within it? Will you first inflict evil fighting upon them and terrible strife, or will you establish friendship between the two factions? Then Zeus, the gatherer of the clouds, said to her in answer, My child, why do you ask and question me in these matters? For was not this your own intention, as you have counseled it? Line 480, how Odysseus should make his way back and punish those others? Do as you will, but I will tell you how it is proper. Now that noble Odysseus has punished the suitors, let them make their oaths of faith and friendship, and let him be king always, and let us make them forget the death of their brothers and sons, and let them be friends with each other, as in the time past, and let them have prosperity and peace in abundance. So he spoke, and stirred on Athena, who was eager before this, and she went in a flash of speed down the pinnacles of Olympus. And now we're changing scenes again. We've left Olympus, and we are back on the earth. When the men had put away their desire for delicious feasting, much enduring great Odysseus began speaking among them. Line 491. Let someone go out now and see if they are approaching. He spoke, and Dolius's son went out, as Odysseus told him. He went and stood on the threshold and saw them all drawing closer. Now presently he spoke in winged words to Odysseus. Line 495. And here they are, coming close to us, so let us arm quickly. So he spoke, and they sprang up and put on their armor, Odysseus with his three, and the six sons of Dolius. And with them Dolius and Laertes put on their armor, gray though they were, but they were fighters perforce. And now, line 500, when all of them in shining bronze had shrouded their bodies, they opened the doors and went outside, and Odysseus led them. But now came their way the daughter of Zeus, Athena, likening herself in appearance and voice to Mentor. Seeing her, much enduring, great Odysseus was happy, and presently he spoke to his dear son, Telemachus. Telemachus, and now yourself being present where men do battle, and the bravest are singled out from the rest, you must be certain not to shame the blood of your fathers, for we in time past all across the world have surpassed in manhood and valor. Line 510. Then the thoughtful Telemachus said to him in answer, you will see, dear father, if you wish, that as far as my will goes, I will not shame my blood that comes from you, which you speak of. So he spoke, and Laertes also rejoiced and said to them, what day is this for me, dear gods? I am very happy. Line 515. My son and my son's son are contending over their courage. Then, standing close beside him, gray-eyed Athena said to Laertes, son of Archesius, far dearest of all my companions, make your prayer to the gray-eyed girl and to Zeus her father, then quickly balance your far-shadowing spear and throw it. Line 520. So Pallas Athena spoke and breathed into him enormous strength, and making his prayer then to the daughter of great Zeus, he quickly balanced his far-shadowing spear and threw it, and struck Eupithes on the brazen side of his helmet, nor could the helm hold off the spear, but the bronze smashed clean through. He fell thunderously, and his armor clattered upon him. Odysseus and his glorious son fell upon their front fighters, and began to strike with swords, and stab with spears leaf-headed, and now they would have killed them all, and given none of them homecoming, had not Athena, daughter of Zeus of the Aegis, cried out in a great voice, line 530, and held back all the company. Hold back, men of Ithaca, from the wearisome fighting, so that most soon and without blood you can settle everything. So spoke Athena, and the green fear took hold of them, and in their terror they let fall from their hands their weapons. Line 535, which fell all on the ground at the cry of the goddess speaking. Striving to save their lives, they turned in flight toward the city. With a terrible cry, much enduring Odysseus, gathering himself together, made a swoop like a high-flown eagle. But the son of Cronos then threw down a smoky thunderbolt, line 540, which fell in front of the gray-eyed daughter of the great father. Then the gray-eyed goddess Athena said to Odysseus, son of Laertes and seed of Zeus, resourceful Odysseus, hold hard! Stop this quarrel and closing combat, for fear Zeus of the wide brows, son of Cronos, may be angry with you. Line 545. So spoke Athena, and with happy heart he obeyed her. And pledges for the days to come, sworn to by both sides, were settled by Pallas Athena, daughter of Zeus of the Aegis, who had likened herself in appearance and voice to Mentor. And thus ends Book 24, the last book of the Odyssey.